May it please the Court. This is a case of first impression. My client was arrested for resisting law enforcement and the crime of trespass. After 18 months of vigorous defense of both of those charges, all the charges were finally dismissed by a motion of the state. When that happened, it left my client with two options. Number one was to bring a 1983 claim for malicious prosecution, because it was not available to him under Indiana Tort Claims Act as a bar. Number two was pursue all state law remedies with the filing of his timely tort claim notice in 180 days of the dismissal of all charges. My client chose to do both. The appellee's argument is going to say that there is no federal 1983 law or 1983 claim for malicious prosecution, and that there's a state law remedy available. While there is a general state law remedy available for malicious prosecution, there's a complete bar to that tort under the Indiana Tort Claims Act. Because there's a complete bar to that tort, there is no liberty that my client could do. The second argument that's being advanced...
But there are remedies under Indiana law, of course, in a situation where somebody's being prosecuted. Someone can file a motion saying there was no probable cause for an arrest, and somebody can file a request to dismiss charges because whatever the person is accused of doesn't state, you know, an offense under state law. You know, Indiana's a whole, the usual array of things, so even if there isn't a tort action per se, why isn't the array of state remedies that's out there to shut off effectively malicious prosecution, meaning prosecution without probable cause, why does it have to be a tort remedy against particular state officials?
Your Honor, I believe that what's happening, and I think this, because it's a case of first impression,
My question is, I mean, it's a broad one. I know we have said before that there are all sorts of particular things under state law that might, in a given case, shut off the right to recover, and that doesn't mean that state law doesn't exist. And what I'm trying to do is step back a bit and say that if a malicious prosecution action is functionally a tort action against somebody who is prosecuting you without probable cause, in the criminal law context against government employees, Indiana doesn't give you a tort action. We all understand that. The tort immunity statute is there. But they do have remedies. You know, if you think you're being maliciously prosecuted, you can raise your probable cause point. And I guess I'm just curious as to why you think it's got to be a tort action or nothing.
Your Honor, I guess to address that point is, in this specific case, dealing with the facts of this case, that this case drug on for 18 months, not only because of continuances from the defendant, but from also continuances from the state. Because it dragged on for 18 months, by doing so, it was effectively precluding my client from ever asserting any type of civil right, any one of his civil rights that are afforded to him under the United States Constitution.
Well, when you say it dragged on, remind me, he's arrested as he's not leaving, you know, after he gets fired from his position. And there must have been some kind of arraignment, you know, some binding him over for this, in which the probable cause question was explored, right?
Yes.
So is it your position that you can still prosecute somebody for malicious prosecution after probable cause has been found?
Your Honor, our position is that when charges are brought against an individual that have no merit, and when those charges are dismissed by motion of the state, the ruling of the district court in this case, what it is effectively doing is making people weigh their penal interests against their civil rights. It's making them choose. There are cases going on right now since this has happened in our own jurisdiction that this is happening, where two individuals similarly charged One files a tort claim notice, one doesn't. Both charged with the exact same crimes. And after the 6 months' time has run, or 180 days has run, the individual who chose to pursue his penal interest and get the case dismissed with a wink, wink, nudge, nudge from the state, if you wait the 180 days, we'll talk. The defendant that doesn't file his tort claim notice gets the charges dismissed, and the defendant that does has to go and proceed to trial. Both charged with the exact same offense.
I understand that, but I guess I'm not aware of a proposition of federal law that says states can't create immunity rules for state officials. The topic of immunity is an interesting one, but that's been seen to be part of the sovereign authority to govern yourself, to decide whether it's state sovereign immunity, whether it's official immunity of some kind. And so I assume your argument is that since there is, in fact, no way to proceed under Indiana law, there must, in this instance, be an exception to Albright against Oliver and Newsom against McCabe, and you should be able to have a federal claim. But we've never said that.
Well, and the Newsom case is very specific about being trial-based misconduct. And our argument here in this case is that this never proceeded to trial. This was an 18-month-long process that, in the meantime, there's no tort claim notice filed during this time because the action for malicious prosecution and false arrest does not occur until it's completed. And it's not complete until you can actually prove to a jury, listen, I beat it. There was no crime committed. There was nothing. How can you be maliciously prosecuted for something that you've not been found guilty of? So our position is that until such time as the action is completed, there is no way that the heck bar wouldn't apply because it would go directly towards that and it would be kicked right out of court. And, Your Honors, I see that I've kind of gone into my rebuttal time. I'd like to turn the lectern over.
Hey, Mr. Thomas. Warren?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court and Counsel. As to the points raised by the appellant, it's important to note here, as he just said, there was never a conviction. So the remedies he had were always available to him had he timely filed them.
Well, there's one action, the malicious prosecution for the resisting arrest, that doesn't get dismissed until less than 2 years before he files this claim. And the troublesome thing is that if we understand from Albright and Newsom that the federal Constitution does not provide any kind of malicious prosecution civil rights remedy when state law is there to offer an effective remedy, if state law structurally does not offer a remedy because of the state immunity rules, then it seems that the premise of Newsom and Albright is not satisfied. I think there are quite a few other claims in this case, as you're implying, like the malicious prosecution for the trespass that appear to be time-barred because he dropped them more than 2 years before he filed this case, the intentional infliction of emotional distress, probably, you know, there's an argument that that's time-barred. It's quite a bit that's time-barred, but the malicious prosecution for resisting does not appear to be time-barred. Because he couldn't, don't you agree, he couldn't bring it until it gets dropped in the state court?
That's absolutely true. But
And that's within 2 years of when he files his case.
But there nevertheless is a state remedy. I mean, this court has held that.
What's the state remedy when there's immunity?
That's precisely it. The
legislative
process, there's immunity available, and the compliance with due process is the legislative process having determined that in these instances we're going to grant these state actors immunity.
That sounds so sophistic to me, actually. It really seems to say, you know, Alice in Wonderland, like, you know, when I say it's a remedy, even though there's no remedy, because you can always go and try and persuade the Indiana legislature to, going forward, create a remedy that will never be available to me. I know we've said things like that, so I'm not challenging you, but I find it intellectually unsatisfactory.
Well, in fact, as you point out, this court has said, as others, time and time again, that the immunity does create – the fact that there's immunity does not mean there's not a constitutional remedy. It's the remedy.
Even though there is no remedy, but there is a remedy.
Because there's immunity.
Because, right. So I mean, honestly, legal fictions can be troubling when they turn out to mean yes means no and no means yes and black means white and no remedy means remedy.
Well, the other thing in this instance that's important to note is that he had an opportunity to bring this claim. He had another remedy he had on the 14th, and it would have been to seek bail. So it's not like there's no remedies available in this context.
Is it possible to sue a governmental entity under Indiana law, not the individuals, but the county or the...
He did sue the city here, Your Honor. And if you're not referring to the respondeat superior claim that was dismissed, are you?
No, mean a direct claim. Sometimes, you know, of course, the federal government and the Federal Tort Claims Act substitutes itself for federal employees precisely for the reason that employees...
Under Indiana law, if you have a state actor identified, you have to name that state actor and not just the entity.
But do you have a remedy against the entity?
Under Indiana law, you do.
So would he have been able to have a remedy against Oakland City or...
Had he timely filed it.
But one of the claims was timely.
Pardon me?
The malicious prosecution claim as to the resisting arrest claim
was not barred. But there was never a conviction here is the thing that seems difficult for me to understand.
But it's resolved in his favor within 2 years of his filing of this lawsuit. That's what we're talking about. So that's not time barred. And I'm just trying to figure out whether there is actually a real remedy that Indiana has for the type of situation that occurred in this case. And one possibility is you can sue only the government employees, but another possibility, at least in theory, because it's the one the federal government uses, is that even though you can't sue the individual employees because of some form of immunity, maybe you can sue the governmental unit.
And he did so here. Again, the problem was that the court found, I think correctly, that it was just untimely.
But it wasn't. I mean, maybe that's just wrong.
I don't think there was an untimeliness finding as to the malicious prosecution claim, the 1983 malicious prosecution claim involving
the
resisting.
He just was finding that it was not recognized under
the Constitution. Right. The judge said it was not cognizable.
That's absolutely right. I did misspeak.
So what is the answer to Judge Wood's question then? Is there a cognizable claim against... for malicious prosecution, either under Indiana law?
And all I can
Indiana
do is go back to Alice in Wonderland and point out that Parrish says that the fact that the state provides the remedy and there's an immunity for it does not mean
it's... But that's not an answer to my question. I'm just asking a question. If I had a computer in front of me, I could research Indiana law right now on it. What does the Indiana Tort Claims Act say about being able to sue a governmental entity, the sheriff's office, a county, a municipality, the state?
It says you may bring those actions as long as you give the requisite 180-day notice and describe the claim.
Because usually the governmental unit does not have immunity. It's only the individuals. And in Indiana, the provision shields government employees from malicious prosecution claims. The Indiana Court of Appeals has said that. And I was just wondering whether there's another avenue. Your case would look a lot nicer to me if there were, in fact, some viable avenue for people to use, other than just hoping, you know, that 10 years from now the Indiana legislature might decide to change the law, which is obviously not going to help anybody in this case.
And I'm not familiar with that, Your Honor.
Okay.
I'm not.
So you, just to clarify one step further, you're saying Indiana law does provide a cause of action against the municipality for the torts of its agents,
right?
Provided that the notice of claim statute
is complied with. The 180-day notice of claim, correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So Indiana does put the municipalities on the hook for the torts of its agents.
It does.
And that supplies a state law remedy.
It does, except that you're immune. The state actors, they're immune.
The state actor is personally immune.
Mm-hmm.
But the municipality stands in for its agents under this statutory scheme and accepts liability pursuant to the statutory requirements if the notice of claim is filed within 180 days, and there's probably a damages cap on it, too,
there
I
is.
Assume.
Yeah, I would
there,
think
is.
That's
no. there is.
That's customary. So it's not true that a plaintiff in this plaintiff's Serena's. Position is without a remedy.
It's
there
not,
is a remedy.
He
the
has
plaintiff
the remedy.
Can sue the municipality for the torts of its agents.
Precisely.
The legislature assigns municipalities that liability subject to these limitations.
Exactly.
Okay.
That is true.
Okay.
Are there other questions of me about this area?
Apparently not.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Foreman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counselor. Your Honor, to address the question that you had posed to me earlier about the defenses and the remedies that a defendant would have under state law, our position is that those would be on the criminal aspect, and it's asking the defendant to choose between his penal interests and his civil rights.
Okay, so that may be. So what do you have to say about the potential of suing the municipality itself, not the individual actors? And did you meet the 180-day notice requirement in this instance? You did at some point name this Oakland City?
Yes, Oakland City is named. The municipality is named.
And how about the 180 days notice?
The 180 days were complied with as of the date of the dismissal of the resisting law enforcement charge, which our position is that because all this was a continuing wrong, because there was the intentional infliction of emotional distress that existed for the 18 months, because the client had to continue to defend vigorously all of these criminal charges that were ended up dismissed by the state, because of all of those, they were all a continuing wrong, and they did not end until all criminal charges had been dismissed.
But the statutory notice of claim requirement starts to run at the time of the event?
Our position is that for the malicious prosecution, it would begin to run at the date that everything is dismissed. Because
and is there any support?
Well, the support would be that there's no – I think if we – in my brief, I think I briefed this exact issue, was that when does it start? And it starts when all the actions that give rise to the suit have commenced. That's what gives the suit and makes it timely. Otherwise, it's not a timely suit. And so our position is that all of that comes in at the time that he filed the Tort Claims Notice Act. That was complied with within the 180 days from the date of the dismissal of all criminal charges. The trespass was dismissed before. The resisting law enforcement is what existed for 18 months.
And that's the part that you didn't – well, that your lawsuit is within 2 years of when the resisting charges were finally dropped.
That is correct.
And you say that within 180 days of that dismissal, you filed the necessary notice.
Your Honor, I see I've gone to my red if I may.
Yeah.
You can respond.
No, that's okay.
Yes, Your Honor, that was complied with 180 days, and I believe that in the complaint it actually states when all of the charges were dropped as well as when the tort claims notice was sent out. I believe that should be in my complaint. Your Honor, if I could have one moment to just address one final issue.
May I have an additional moment?
Right now, this case has a lot of unintended consequences, as I stated earlier. There's a strong public policy that should be taken into account by this court in that making a defendant choose between his penal interests and asserting his civil rights is not something that this court should want. What you're doing is allowing the state, or what this ruling is doing, is allowing the state to continue to push cases along until the 180 days runs. And after that 180 days runs, that's when they can dismiss the case if nothing has been filed, nothing has been served, and with a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, cause is over.
Mr. Thomas, the tenure of this proceeding, were ever those all delays caused by the state, the request for continuances by the defendant in this case?
I believe that there were continuances requested by both the state and the defendant. I was not the criminal defense attorney.
No, so your suggestion that there might be a state policy of just moving the case along, it sounds like the state may have had a handmaiden in this particular case by the defendant choosing to take more time on not a terribly complex case, right? Factually?
Factually, I don't believe it was that complex.
I mean, one could get to trial on this kind of a case, one would think, relatively shortly. I'm not familiar with the docket there. And still be within 180 days if they were successful in the dismissal. I appreciate your suggestion that state can nudge this along, but that's why I asked whether or not...
That was only just as part of the policy argument of what this case can mean. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Thank you, Mr. Bourne. The case is taken under advisement.